Hey everyone, I'm Emily Sheets. I'm an alcoholic. I couldn't decide between water or coffee tonight. And I'm pretty used to having two drinks in my hand, so that's how I decided. I didn't make a choice, I just got both. My sobriety date is November 1st, 2004. I have a sponsor down in Washington, D.C. I know her sponsor, and I know all the sponsorship down the line, and that's pretty awesome. I like knowing that my sponsor has a sponsor. I like knowing that she's accountable to somebody, because I like being accountable to somebody. I don't do well on my own. I make a lot of really poor decisions on my own when I'm not bouncing them off somebody, you know. And I love my sponsor, man. I have a relationship with my sponsor that's unlike anything that I've ever experienced before. It's beautiful. I've never been entirely honest with somebody else about who I am and where I come from, and she knows everything there is to know about me, you know. And she doesn't tell me not to call her anymore. She says I love you when we hang up the phone. It's beautiful. And actually, the first time she said that, I was like, I love you too. Click, you know. And that's weird. It's weird to have somebody say I love you to you, you know, especially when I have such a little understanding of what that really means. You know, I'm just tapping into that now about how to connect with other people and how to feel love and how to give it. You know, it's been my experience that we tend to really suck at that. You know, and the reason that I found for me is that I'm so full of self-centeredness and I'm so motivated by what makes me feel good that I don't care what you think. You know, I don't care what you think. I don't care what you feel. If you're not doing what I want you to do in order for me to, you know, feel good, then sorry. You know, moving on, I'm going to try to find somebody else that will. So I'm pretty happy about that. I'm really happy to be here and be sober. This is an awesome group. I'm so happy to see all of you here. I love going out of town for meetings. And that's actually another way that I stay accountable is knowing that I have to speak. You know, it's like, I can't act screwed up today because I got to speak. And I can't, like, be a hypocrite and stand up there and be like, my life is awesome and I treat others with respect today. And, you know, be acting all jacked up outside of meetings, you know. So that's kind of a nice way to make sure that I'm acting all right, you know. I don't know. Let's see where to start. First of all, I'd like to thank my road dogs, Joe, Anna, and Joe. I only travel with people that start their name with Joe. So that's pretty fun. It's really for my own entertainment, so that when I want to address one of them, I say Joe, and they don't know who I'm talking about. I'll just start talking. That's kind of fun. It really only amuses me, but I like to thank them. I love having people to travel with. You know, that's a pretty awesome little meeting. Is that ride in the car? You know, and we actually got a little lost on the way here because of me. I refused to believe the directions, and I was like, no, we're gonna go this way because clearly I know what I'm talking about, and you know, I've never been to this part of New Jersey before ever. So we're gonna go this way, and then finally I gave up, and I was like, all right. Turn on the GPS. Maybe it knows better than I do. So that's how we started our trip, and it's pretty cool, and I'm glad that they're here, and I'm glad that you're all here. It's a miracle. I'm sure that God is pretty happy to have a bunch of his lost little kids in one single meeting, in one single room, you know? So, childhood. I grew up in a relatively normal household. I set the pattern of behavior. My mom likes to tell this story when I was two. You know, some grave injustice in the house happened. I didn't get my way. I didn't get candy or whatever. And so I decided to pack my suitcase, 2 years old, and run away. Two. And so I packed my suitcase very diligently. I folded all my clothes, and I ran away down to the basement. And that was going to be my new digs. And they weren't going to bother me with their rules anymore. And I was going to be able to get away with everything and do what I wanted to do, you know. And that actually, as funny as that story is, or as weird as that story is that would be my reaction every single time something didn't go my way. You know, every single time I'm packing up and I'm out of here. You're not doing what I want, or you're getting in my way. And I have ideas other than what you think is best. So, water. So I ran away when I was two. I think I moved back pretty quickly. You know, I remember growing up, we would go to church. That was my first exposure to God, was the Lutheran church. And, you know, the pastor, I would be like 5 or 6 or whatever, and the pastor would call up all the little kids for the children's sermon. And I remember sitting there and being in my head and not paying attention to anything that the pastor was saying. And just sort of like drawing and feeling absolutely no connection with God whatsoever. And they would call up all the little kids, and my dad would nudge me to go up with all the little kids, and then they, you know, go down to Sunday school and do their thing. And hang out with each other, make friends, and I refused to go up. I was, even at that time, as a little kid, before ever picking up a drink, I was so paralyzed with fear. What are you people going to think about me? Basically, they were strangers, you know, at this congregation, and I didn't, don't look at me, you know. These basic things, you know, like going up and listening to a children's sermon, or raising my hand to say I have to go to the bathroom in kindergarten class. You know, like somebody would raise their hand to answer a question, or if they had to pee, and I would just be like, oh, how do you do that? You know? How do you raise your hand and ask something? Well, aren't you stricken with fear right now, you know? It blew my mind that anybody could ask for anything, you know, or stand in front of other people and or answer a question in class. Like that, I was just so, again, there was just that twist of fear in my gut from early on. And I couldn't have told you that. I couldn't have put that into words when I was a little kid. You know, I'm full of fear and there's a twist in my gut. I don't know what's wrong with me. You know, there was never any of that. I just knew there's something a little off. Something that I'm experiencing is not happening for these other little kids, you know. And so I'm growing up and I have this fear and I have this really loud, you know, imaginary or sort of imaginary land in my head. And, you know, it's just kind of weird. It's just kind of weird being Emily, you know. And I had a couple of alcoholic figures in my life there that I saw, you know, very early on that I didn't want what alcohol had, you know, because I saw it right in front of my face, you know, what alcohol could do to families, you know, how it could pull them apart, how it could destroy relationships, and I knew in my head I don't want any part of that, you know. I never saw, like, good times with alcohol. I just saw, you know, destruction and ruined relationships. And, you know, so growing up, I didn't take my first drink until I was 15 years old. And that's kind of like late bloomer by today's standards, you know. You know, I would cut friends out of my life because they would start, you know, smoking pot in 7th grade and, you know, drinking and stuff. And I would cut them out because I was like, no, they're stupid. I've seen the film strips. I know what's happened. They're going to have needles hanging out of their eyeballs by the end of the week, you know. Like, I know what happens, you know. And so I never did it. And again, I had that those figures in my life to say, no, I don't want any part of it. And then, you know, one day, it was with the softball team that I was on. And we had just lost a big game. And my bright idea was, hey, why don't we get, you know, a couple six-packs and get drunk? It'd be awesome, you know. And I don't know where that thought came from. I don't know why. You know, it was there, but we did. I got my way. I like getting my way, and we laid out in this field because I grew up in. I come from sturdy Amish Pennsylvania Dutch roots, outside of Reading area, and we don't pronounce the V's as V's. They're more W's. You know, where I come from, and so we're growing up. I'm growing up in farm country. And we're laying out in this, we're hanging out in this field. There's a big tent set up at this girl's house. And we get the six packs and it's like Dimas, you know, and like beers. And, it's awesome, you know, we're hanging out. And, by the way, I think it's a really good sign, like, if you're an alcoholic that, if wine coolers, just the thought of them makes you angry. Like, that's probably a really good sign you're an alcoholic. And thank you for clapping, because you understand. It's like, nah, man, I drink vodka. I need to get there, and I need to get there quick, you know? And Mike's Hard Lemonade? Come on, you know? It did. It would literally make me angry. But I didn't know that at the time. First time I drank. I don't know what alcohol is going to do for me, you know? I just think, we're being naughty. We're out of this field. Drinking, you know, and so I start drinking, and what I don't know is that I have this thing in my body, you know, where I just have a different reaction to alcohol. So I'm drinking, and they're drinking, and they're playing cards and stuff, and within like probably half an hour. I've gone through quite a few, and I can barely make it up, you know, into the house to go to the bathroom. I need to have them, like, drag me, you know, to the bathroom, because I drink hard and I drink fast, you know? And I don't know where I learned that from. I may have learned it from those figures growing up, but I don't know. I just did it without even thinking about it. And, you know, I'm sure they got really annoyed because they tried to put me to bed, and they insisted. They're like, Emily, you're probably just tired. You need to go to bed, go in the tent. And I remember just laying in the tent like, ah, it's great, you know? Because what happens for me when I drink alcohol is that this magic, warm feeling happens. You know, and all that fear and all that anxiety that I didn't even know really was there before is gone. You know, and I'm able to connect with these girls, you know, that I, on my team that I grew up with since I'm 8 years old for the first time. Like, the girls that I didn't really even like, they were like my best friends, you know. And they were awesome. You guys, I love you. You know, I must have said that like 100 times. And I did. I was able to connect with people for the first time, and I didn't even know that I wasn't doing it before. I didn't know that I was so wrapped up in this fantasy land in my head that, like, there was just, I had no idea. You guys terrified me, you know? And so, you know, I'm throwing my arm around, you know, the girl I didn't particularly like, and she's taking me to the bathroom. I'm like, yeah, you're awesome. You're so funny. Why aren't we friends, you know? And I had the best time, and, you know, I was the only one that got cut off that night, you know? And they tried to teach me how to play cards. And I remember just laying on my stomach watching them play cards, and I had my little deck, and they'd be like, Emily, it's your turn. I'm like, what? You know, I'm not paying attention. I'm so in this feeling of how good it feels to be intoxicated, you know? And I don't remember thinking this at the time, but it's like, no wonder they drank the way they did. You know, no wonder people drink. If this happens, I need to be drunk 24/7. You know, I wish I would have discovered this when I was 5. I would have went up there to, like, the little services, man. I would have been right there front and center, like, hey, I know it answers all your questions about God, you know? I have a spiritual experience happening right now, you know? It really did. Alcohol did for me what I could not do for myself. It absolutely transformed me, you know, mind and body. You know, and the other really cool thing that I remember very clearly that happened that night was that I was, again, somehow, I laid a lot. I sort of dragged myself a lot and laid a lot. But I'm laying on my back in the grass, and they're all, you know, kind of off to the side or whatever. And I'm staring up, and I'm feeling kind of sick. I don't throw up that night, but I'm feeling kind of sick. And, you know, the whole world is spinning. You know how you get the spins, especially when you're laying? You just, the only thing that kind of makes it feel a little okay is, like, if you close your eyes. And I open my eyes up a little bit. The whole world is spinning. And I'm looking at the stars. It's a beautiful, bright night. It's warm. And I just remember thinking, like, man, I want to feel like this all the time. You know, this is the way I'm supposed to feel. This completes my chemistry. This is what's been missing. And, I didn't start chewing heroin in my eyeball right after that. You know, it took a little bit of time. I would drink on the weekends. I can count on one hand the amount of times I ever went out to drink. I would do a lot of pre-gaming. Unfortunately, the pre-gaming would turn into the full game with me just alone, you know, because I would be too drunk to go out with everyone. So that didn't really work out well. But the first real high school party I went to, and I'm young. I got sober young, so I got a lot of these stories. But the cool thing is that it illustrates the way that my mind works and the way that my body works, because it's very different. But I go to my first high school party. And I make out with 3 guys, and I got the name Beer Slut. That's for you, Joanna. not because she was a beer slut, but me. She likes that story. I got the nickname Beer Slut, and I was very proud of that name, and I don't know why. But I was just like, that freedom that it gave me, man. I was just like, yeah, I'll make out with you, sure. You know? And I would wake up and be like, why? Why did I do that? Oh, well, you know? And I would very, very happily give, you know, down the road, eventually I would give greater and greater, you know, degrees of my self-respect and my dignity. Take it, you know? Alcohol does a lot for me, and I'm not really willing to give that up. And I'll do whatever mind tricks I have to do and whatever pretending not to care I have to do in order to keep that feeling, you know, and make sure that that's not taken away from me. So I acquired that little name, I remember I went to this party, and I got there, and I'm playing quarters with these guys, right? And all I could think about, by the way, people incidental. If there was alcohol there, I was there. You know, if there wasn't, wasn't there. I went. Some people go into those situations to hang out with people and to socialize. I went because I knew I could get loaded, and if I couldn't get loaded, I did not go. There was just I was too full of fear to be around you guys. I was too terrified of what you guys were thinking about me. But I go to this party, I'm playing quarters with these guys, and at first I'm very nervous, and I don't know what the hell I'm gonna say to them, and they're all older and cuter and greater, and then I get drinks in me, you know, and within a very short time, I had gone outside, I excuse myself, you know, very quietly, excuse me a moment, and I go outside and I proceed to vomit all over the front of my shirt, and outside, and probably a little on my pants too, but I just remember very clearly, like, thinking that I had, you know, that sort of drunken, like, wipe off, you know? And of course this does nothing to get rid of vomit on the front of your shirt, right? So I go back in the party thinking I'm so hot. Cause that's also something else. You get very lucky to be around this awesomeness, you know? Before I'm drunk, I walk in, I'm like, oh my God, nobody's going to want to talk to me, I'm out of my mind, they're going to know, they're going to figure me out, that I'm crazy. And then I get a few drinks in me, and man, hey guys, you know, and they're all begging me to hang out with me, you know. And I walk in, and there's, you know, little crusty bits of corn on the front of my, why is there always corn in it, you know, I don't eat any corn, but I walk back in and I'm covered in my own vomit, and I don't notice the weird looks that I'm getting. I just, again, I think I'm awesome, you know, and there's a guy that talks about, you know, alcoholism being a disease of perception. I would not want to make out with the person with vomit on the front of their shirt, you know, but I just assumed that everybody did. And they very quickly sent me out the door, and I couldn't understand why, you know. I somehow twisted it around in my head to make it my decision. I'm just gonna go, you know. So I did, and I drove home, you know, not thinking twice about it. You know, again, I can justify and rationalize anything in my head, especially when I'm drinking. You know, so that sort of set the pace, and this also was about the time I started making the rounds at the psychiatrist and therapist and all that, trying to figure out what the hell's wrong with Emily, you know. There's something a little off, you know, and other people are really kind of starting to pick up on this. So, you know, I go and I'm getting all kinds of labels of what's wrong with me, you know, and pretty much everything under the sun I got labeled as. And I'm given every prescription pill under the sun trying to figure it out. And nothing's working, probably because I was drinking massive amounts of alcohol on top of it. But, you know, nothing worked to fix me. Nothing worked to fix me like alcohol fixed me. And, you know, by my senior year, I was pretty much getting drunk all the time. I was the one of the only days that I hadn't got messed up in high school was the day I had a really severe panic attack in school, and they rushed me off to the emergency room. And that is a perfect illustration of what sobriety does for me. It gives me panic attacks, you know? I don't know how to interact with you people sober. I don't know how to do it. The world and everybody that lies within, you guys terrify me, you know? I could do simple things like order a pizza when I was sober, you know? Just the whole thing, you know? And so I go and they try to figure out what's wrong with me, and eventually they diagnose me with, you know, an anxiety disorder and all that. And that's probably true. I'm not saying that's not true, because I was anxious. You know how they talk about in the big book, one of the guys goes to the hospital to rest his nerves, you know? Definitely not alcoholism, just resting my nerves, you know? And those nerves happen for me when I'm sober, you know? So I go off to school. One of the things that I explained in my head to myself about why I was so different and why nobody else out here understood me and why you all scared of me was that I was actually a genius, and I convinced my mom that I needed to be tested for Mensa. You know, because I have a genius level IQ. But I'm not so stupid that I think I'm smarter than everybody, most people. But if you were sort of smarter than me, you were like the valedictorian, because really I'm so average. There were a lot of people ahead of me in school, but if you were smart, then I was more creatively smart than you, and I would create masterpieces, and you couldn't create masterpieces, you know? And I just had this whole explanation as to why I was different from everyone, you know? And it was because I was a creative genius, so just in case anyone is wondering. So I go to college, and I have this explanation in the back of my head, and I'm thinking, okay, finally, I'm going to be around, you know, my intellectual and creative peers, and this is going to be fixed, you know? I have an old roommate who did a lot of things to fix the way she was feeling, you know, in her alcoholism. She, like, moved to Japan. She worked in the sex industry. She did all these things to fix, you know, what was going on with her. And, like, I remember having these ideas of what was going to fix me, of being like, man, once I get my braces off, you know, things are going to be okay, you know? And then they wouldn't be, and then I'd be like, okay, I can't wait to get contacts, because then things are going to be okay, you know? So one of those okay moments for me was going to college. You know, this is going to fix this little thing, that this little twist that's going on in me, you know? And so I go to college, and I proceed. Within a month, I'm in arm and leg restraints at the university's hospital, losing my mind. And I had no idea how I got there, because what had happened was without really thinking about it, attempted to drink myself to death, you know? And that was not my intention. I thought I was having a good time. And then I wind up in the hospital, and, you know, I remember freaking out, punching and kicking and doing all this stuff, being crazy. I hadn't eaten, you know? And I'm punching and kicking the walls and at the nurses and stuff. And they're like, Emily, do you want something to calm you down? And I'm like, what do you think? You know? Like, just being a smartass. And just hating everybody, and just being pissed off, and you know, so they 302'd me, which is, you know, when they won't let you out because you're nuts, and they wouldn't let me out, and I fought and kicked, and I couldn't understand. I remember telling everybody that I met in there, like, listen, I don't belong here, you know, and not understanding why I was there. Why am I here? You guys think I tried to kill myself? No, I just like to drink a lot and take a lot of drugs, you know? That's not a suicide attempt. That's just how I do, you know? And so I finally get myself out of there, and I beg my mom, and I tell her this, you know, this crazy story about why I need to go back to the dorms, because really all I needed to do was get a load on. That's all I could think about, you know? And when I finally got there, I told my friends that I couldn't be alcoholic because they were questioning me at this time, you know? Well, I didn't drink for 3 days. Because they don't tend to give you alcohol in the psych ward. That's why I didn't drink for 3 days. I can't be alcoholic because I haven't drank for 3 days. There's no way. And they're like, well, yeah, we're still not going to give you any, you know, because I got to have them buy it for me. So I proceed to get a pretty nasty pill habit. And I'll figure out a way. I'll figure out a way to get messed up. I'll figure out a way to fix this head that sounds like if all of you started screaming at me all at once, that's what it's like. Without AA, without a solution, without God, or without booze. That's what it's like. Immediately, you know? So I move around a couple times, again, just trying to fix what's going on with me. I try more pills, I try more therapists, I try everything. And I eventually, manipulate my way back, to Philadelphia to go back to school, because this is what's gonna fix me. I'm gonna pull it together. And I'm gonna get better, and I'm gonna actually go to class this time. I'm not gonna wind up in the hospital. It's a little detour, you know. I had to pull it together, because that's what everybody kept telling me. Emily, you just need to pull it together, you know. On the outside, I looked like probably just like a brat. I just needed a swift kick in the ass, you know. And just pull it together was what I got a lot. And I also got that look. You guys know that look? It was like, what's wrong with you? You know that look? I would get those a lot. And sober and drunk, I would get those looks. So I go back to school. I can't pull it together. Turns out I'm an alcoholic and I can't pull it together, you know? Did not know that at the time. Just thought I was crazy, you know? And I remember calling a friend of mine up. I had just done the last of everything. I ended up in this really shady part of Philadelphia, which turned out to be my fantasy land. Actually, like, think of the worst neighborhood that you've been to cop, and then times it by 10. That's the neighborhood I was living in Philadelphia. And so the day I was actually moving in, we got offered wet from a perfect stranger, and it was awesome. I was like, wow, this is perfect. This is where I needed to be the whole time, you know? Where all my neighbors are just, they're just offering me drugs, you know? Now that is a neighborhood brothel, you know? And it was. I got really excited about that. I was like, perfect. I'm with my people, you know? So my little plan didn't work, and, see, because I didn't understand that, like, if I drank on Saturday, I trigger this phenomenon of craving, you know, and that means that I might be drinking till Wednesday, you know, and I didn't know that. I thought I could just drink on the weekend, go to class like a good girl, pull it together, and be fine. Actually, Temple University, the school I was going to in Philly, wouldn't let me in without a signed letter from a psychiatrist. They would not let me back in. They were like, you need to be on some meds, you know, and we're not going to let you back in until you are. So I was like, yeah, I'm taking them. Here's a letter, you know. And so that's kind of funny. I didn't think about that in a while. But I ran through all my money. I have pretty much no relationship with my parents. And I don't know that if I drink on Saturday, that means I might be drinking till Wednesday, you know. And I can't figure this out in my head. I think I'm just crazy, and I'm spending all my money on non-conference approved substances, you know. And I always got a bottle of vodka by my bed, but that's not my problem, you see. You know, that's the only thing that makes me feel a little bit okay about being me. That's the only thing that makes me feel a little bit okay about being in my skin. You know, this like drinking just lets me breathe. You know, without it, I can't. So. Don't even try to take that away from me. I learned very quickly to lie to people about how much I drank, you know. But one day I ran out of money, ran out of everything, empty bottle of vodka by my bed. Because I'm drinking in the morning now. Like, I can't show up for life without it, you know. This is, it was desperation drinking at this point. And just, you know, drinking to be a vegetable, basically. Because it wasn't doing that thing where, like, it settled me down, you know, that second trip to the hospital, I'd been drinking, you know, so the sobriety thing wasn't working, and then something switched where the drinking thing wasn't working to alleviate all that stuff, you know, and so I called this person up, and it just so happened that she was dating a guy in AA, and I call her up, and I'm like, I get honest with her, and I didn't plan on being honest. I didn't know what I was going to say. I just kind of like dumping my crap on people, and that was pretty much what I intended to do. And I call her up and I was like, you know, Amanda, I can't stop drinking and I want to die. You know, and also by this time I wake up every morning and wish that I had died in my sleep. You know, I had a death wish, and that's an understatement, you know. I mean, every day I would just wish that I could just get up the balls to do it. You know, that was really the only reason why I didn't. And I also hoped that drinking would give me the courage to do so. You know, because I was such a burden on life, and I hated everything. I really did. I hated everybody and everything. And nobody wants to be around that, you know. So I call her up and I say, Amanda, you know, I can't stop drinking and I want to die. And she's like, well, Emily, why don't you come to an AA meeting with me? And it's amazing how quickly our egos can get bigger again. Because I was like, nah, I'm cool, you know? And I just told her that I want to die and I can't stop drinking. And I'm like, nah, it's cool. No AA meeting for this girl. It's not that desperate yet, you know? And she was like, and this became sort of my rallying cry in early sobriety. It was like, well, Emily, what do you have to lose? Oh, you know, what do I have to lose? I have pretty much no relationship with my parents, except to ask them for money. My mom cried her heart out when I left her to come back to school. I have no relationship with my dad, really, except to use him for money, you know. I had no friends. I had, like, acquaintances. I had those people that, like, if one of us had something, we were calling, you know. That was about it. No money. I wasn't going to class. So on the outside, I could have made it look like I had stuff going for me, but really, no. You know, there was no substance there, and I wanted no part of life, you know, so, Emily, what do you have to lose? Nothing, you know, So I go to my first AA meeting. I'm shaking, and it was like when I was a little kid in church, man. They nudged me to go up and get my 24-hour chip, and I was like, if I get up, I'm running out of here. No way, you know? I couldn't get up in front of everybody. And I'm shaking. I just remember shaking the first couple weeks of sobriety and being just this nervous ball of energy because once again I'm sober. And once again it's so much harder for me to shove all those feelings of, you know, guilt and shame from all the things that I did when I was drinking. They start bubbling up. You know, and the harder you try to push them down, it's like the more they're pushing back at you, wanting to come out, you know? And that's what started to happen for me. All this anxiety was just there. And the beautiful thing is that I got tricked into going to my second meeting. And they were like, Emily, do you have a sponsor yet? You should have somebody to sponsor you. Emily, do you have a sponsor yet? You should have somebody to sponsor you. You should get a sponsor. Emily, you need a sponsor. My first full day sober, right? So I'm like, okay, I'll get a sponsor, you know? And I asked this woman, to be my sponsor for a couple of reasons. One, she said HP instead of God, because I had a big problem with the whole God thing, you know? I didn't want to have nothing to do with that. I was hoping to avoid that angle, you know? Because I was so smart and doing really well for myself, you know? And two, this woman, she had a really cool accent. You know, so I appreciated that about her. They were like, find somebody who has what you want. I'm like, okay, it says HP, higher power instead of God, check. Has a cool accent, check. And the last thing was that I thought she might be a lesbian. And if the whole sponsorship thing didn't work out. You can see where the wheels are going. I was very interested at the time in what she might be able to introduce me to. You know, maybe like a secret cabal of hot foreign lesbians, you know? So I asked her to sponsor me, and she said no. Heartbroken. And she was like, no, because I'm leaving for Australia tomorrow, so you're going to need to find somebody else. Like, okay. But she pointed me to one of the women she was sponsoring. Who had about 4 months sober, and I'm so glad that I didn't know that that's not the right thing to do, you know, because that woman absolutely saved my life, you know. She was able to connect with me in a way that was like, it was magic. And on the outside, we had pretty much nothing in common, except that we were hopeless drunks, you know. But because of that, I was able to connect with another human being in a way that I never felt like I had before. So I got home that night. I had a little bit of hope in my heart. They sat down with me for a couple hours outside this coffee shop and explained to me what alcoholism is. Thank God they didn't just throw their numbers at me and say, call me tomorrow, you know, because I probably wouldn't have. They took the time out right then and there to say, okay, here's what's going on. Here's our experience with alcoholism and what you can do to, you know, to recover from it, basically. And I wasn't sure if I was an alcoholic. They went through every single bullet point in the book. They opened it up, and they were sharing their experience with me, and I was relating to every single thing, especially the spiritual malady stuff, you know, the bedevilments on page 52, you know, all those things. I was like, yeah, personal with your trouble with personal relationship, yeah, you know, great misery, depression, yeah, definitely, you know. And I related to every single one of those things, but I was like, I'm too young. I can't be an alcoholic. I relate to all you people, yeah, but I'm, you know, no way. And finally they were like, okay, Emily, well, we've given you everything we can. Why don't you, go and try some controlled drinking? And I was like, well, what do you mean by that? You know, because controlled drinking, who does that, you know? And they're like, well, you go wherever you go. They said to a bar. I was like, well, I don't drink at a bar. I drink at home alone. And they were like, okay, go home alone in your room. And try to have one or two and see if you're okay with that. See if you can stop there, you know, and try that a few times and see if that works for you, you know. And I think three things might happen in that situation. One, you go and you try it and you find out, yay, you're not an alcoholic, you know. B, you try it and you find you can't control it and hope to God that you make it back to AA. But it's worth a bad case of the jitters, you know, to find out for sure. And what happened for me was that fear shot down my spine, and I knew exactly what was going to happen. I never had one or two. I was never interested in having one or two. Why am I ever going to have one or two in my life? And that's when, you know, that crack in my gut opened up, and I'm like, oh, I get it. You know, I get what it means to have that physical component. You know, I know what it means to drink with desperation, you know. And that was really important for me to understand, because I want to state, if I don't relate to you guys, why am I going to do what you do to get better, you know? If I'm a little bit different, if I'm in... That's why I don't introduce myself as an alcoholic anda, you know? I'm not an alcoholic anda anything. If I had to list all the andas, you know, at the end, I would take up the whole hour of the meeting, you know? I got a lot of problems. And they all happen to be stem from a spirituality that the 12 steps helps, you know, helps fix. But yeah, so I finally, I related, and I got home that night, and they had taken all this time. I had my brand new sponsor who had, you know, a few months, but she had been through the book, and she was practicing the principles, and she had a sponsor, and she had a home group, and she was doing the deal, you know. It was beautiful. And she definitely had something that I did not have, you know. One being a desire to live, you know. That was a lofty goal for me back then, you know. Really? You don't want to die? Really? Don't you know how terrible it is? So I got home that night. So I got home that night, I have a little bit of hope in my heart. I understand I'm an alcoholic. I get it in my gut. You know, I might not really totally have it up here yet because I was so foggy and, you know, quite frankly, I couldn't comprehend anything. but I knew in my gut that that's what my problem was. After all these labels, after all this time, I get it. These people understand it, you know. And I get home and I actually get in the shower. I didn't shower much. That's kind of what I brought to Alcoholics Anonymous. I was very stinky. And I was wearing somebody else's shoes because I didn't like my shoes. Because I remember the shoes I was wearing because I stared at my feet the whole time, you know. And I always wore sweatpants. And I was greasy and just full of acne, you know. Because I didn't... Why dress up, you know? I was just where I was at. But I got home because I had this little bit of hope in my heart to take a shower. And I get out of the shower, and I hear down the hall my bartender's voice coming down the hall. And I run out of the shower, and I lock myself in my room, and I'm like pacing back and forth because I know that I can get what I need to feel okay from this guy. And I also know that there's a fridge full of stuff, and I know that there's a house full of people that will get me exactly what I need. And it all hits me, and I'm like, how am I going to sleep tonight? I'm trying to do this whole sober thing. This is my first full day sober. Whoa. You know, it all kind of hits me. And the hope was just enough to get me to pick up the phone. And after calling this guy, he told me to call my sponsor, my new sponsor. And I know this woman for about 2 hours, you know. And I'm crying. And I'm freaking out. And really all I did was call her to get permission to have one so that I could be okay. You know, I thought like my new AA sponsor would be like, all right, go ahead, just one, you know. We'll talk in the morning, don't worry about it, you know. And she didn't give me that permission, much to my chagrin. She listened, God bless her for her patience, man. She listened for a little while about why I needed one and how miserable I was and how there was no way that I was going to be able to do this sobriety thing and why was I even trying, you know, all that jazz. And she said, after all this, she was like, well, Emily, why don't we say a prayer together? Again, I'm trying to avoid this whole spiritual angle. I think I almost probably just laughed at her. I was like, really? You're suggesting I pray? I don't need a prayer. I need a Xanax. You know, like, you're not getting it. You know, you're crazy, you know. And I can't believe I didn't hang up on her right then, you know. But I didn't. You know, for the grace of God, man, I went on and on again about why I needed one. Maybe she wasn't listening the first time. And then she's like, listen, this is what I have to offer you. This is what I do when I'm in this situation, and this is all I have to pass on to you. There is no way that I can stand between you and whatever you're about to do tonight, whether that's go to sleep sober or get really screwed up. I can't do anything. I was like, But you're my AA sponsor. You should be able to do something, you know? And she's like, well, I can't. So either you're going to turn to page 63 with me right now, or this conversation's over. That's essentially what she said. And I was like, oh. And again, what do you have to lose? So I'm crying, turn to page 63. The whole time I'm pissed because I can't believe this lady's making me pray with her because she's out of her mind. And I say this third step prayer with her. And at the end of the prayer, through tears and snot and grossness and just feeling wretched and feeling like she's out of her mind and this is not going to work, I felt a little bit better. And there was no sort of like white light. There was none of that. You know, Jesus didn't come down and it's going to be okay. It was just this feeling on the inside that that night I was going to be okay. I didn't know about the rest of the time. I didn't know about 5 days from now. I just knew that night I was going to be all right. And I surprised myself, and out of my mouth came, "Can we say that again?" And I was like, weird, you know? And that's kind of what my sobriety's been like ever since, is a whole series of these weird moments, you know, where I just kind of look around and I'm like, that doesn't make any reasonable sense whatsoever, you know? And that was my first weird moment, and I would say that was my first, you know, spiritual experience. And even after that experience, I still had a problem with God. I shuddered every time it was said in a meeting. But I could not ignore that. I could not ignore that the prayer had worked for me that night. You know, damn it. You know. And so we launched out into the steps, and it was amazing. She took me through. She could see, and the people that I was running around with could see that I was dying, that I needed a solution. You know, so we went through the book, and I was foggy, man, don't get me wrong. Like, a lot of the stuff just went way over my head. But we went through, and I related to stuff in Bill's story. We listened to Joe and Charlie tapes together. Like, they took me everywhere. And I remember reading the part in the book where it talks about self-will run riot. And I'm like, what does that mean? You know? Because, like, if you are self-will run riot, and you don't have any experience doing anything other than that, it's like you don't know black without white, you know? It's like I don't know what it is to not be like that. What is that? Isn't that what you're supposed to be like? No? And she was like, self-will run riot is basically what you've been your whole life, you know? And you've run your life into the ground, and now it's time to try a different way. I was like, okay. I loved that promise in the third step. We were reborn. And I get, even now, like, it touches my gut, because I get the shots of the heart, because it's like, I needed to be reborn. I didn't need, like, a tune-up. I needed, like, a total engine overhaul, you know? Because I was messed up. I don't know how else to say it and sum it up. I was messed up. And that whole promise, we were reborn, like, I felt dead on the inside when I got here, guys. Like, that's no exaggeration. I felt dead on the inside. There was just nothing there. And to be reborn, like, you can't be reborn without a part of you dying. You know, so if you feel dead in here tonight, there's hope for you. You know, because there is that promise there. And it's a renewing in your mind. It's a renewing, like, in your gut, you know, where it counts. And that happened for me, because you can't have clones, you know? You can't be reborn and still be the same person, you know? So I actually get really excited for the ones who feel dead inside. I'll, like, beeline across a room, you know? You look pretty empty in your eyes and in your soul, you know? I get excited for those ones, man. It's like, what's going on? You look sad, you know? Because that's what I brought to AA. I brought a pathetic, miserable mess, man. And my life has absolutely been revolutionized and changed, you know? A lot of people, like, especially new girls, when I start working with them, they don't believe me. They don't believe that the person that I described that I brought here, you know? And then they look at me, the person that AA transformed, and they just don't know what they're beside themselves, you know? They're like, really? You were terrified of people, too. You shook when you had to read something at a meeting, too, you know? I'm like, yeah, so I still sometimes do, you know? And it's beautiful. It's a beautiful way of life. I wish that I had about 3 more hours to talk about the absolutely amazing things in my life today. I can't even tell you the outside stuff and the inside stuff. My first semester at school, I had a 1.23 GPA, which I told everyone that I did on purpose, because it's like, 1, 2, 3, get it, I'm smart. I told people I did that on purpose, but I did it. I just didn't go to class. It was like, drink a bottle of Robitussin or take my final. You know, there's no toss up there. And then in February, this was awesome. I graduated from Temple with magna cum laude honors, and my sponsor came up, and my parents, and one of my aunts, and we hung out for the weekend, and they got to watch me graduate with honors. You know, it's hard to pull up that GPA, you know, and it has nothing to do with me. I showed up to class. That was about it, you know, and I did AA, you know, and I made that the priority of my life, and it happened, you know, without me. It felt like a blink of an eye, you know. Vanilla was like 6 years in the making, but it happened, you know, and that beautiful moment happened, and I didn't even want to walk. I called my sponsor up. I'm like, I don't want to walk. Do I have to walk? Do you have to go to the ceremony to get your diploma? She was like, well, probably not, but I'll bet your parents would really like to see you. I was like, all right, you know, and I'm so glad that she said that, because it's hard for me to think about what other people want. I just know what I want, you know, and thank God she made that suggestion, because that beautiful moment happened. And you know, when I'm drinking, I don't show up to funerals or viewings, because that makes me very uncomfortable, and I'm motivated by, you know, what makes me feel good. And funerals and viewings don't make me feel good, so I'm not going. And I didn't show up to one when I was drinking. And I went to my grandfather's funeral a couple of years ago, and I got to, like, hold my grandmother's hand and cry with her. I was not capable of that before. I don't connect with people in that way, you know. That was a miracle. You know, so, I don't know, that was beautiful. I have friends today. This is all a result of following somebody farther down the path than me, you know. This is all a result of making amends, of doing a whole bunch of stuff that I don't want to do. You know, I don't want to be honest with people and see where I can make a relationship right. You know, I don't want to be entirely honest with another human being. I don't want to pray. You know, I don't want to. Well, now I do actually. I like praying. I meditate in the morning. I help people. You know, it is not my purpose at an AA meeting to chill with my buddies. You know, I'm looking out for that girl that's sitting in the back not talking to anybody and almost just daring you to talk to her. You know that one? Like, I dare you. You know, I am so miserable. You will leave this conversation crying, you know, that is my goal, you know, and I'll go right up to her, man, and I'm just like, hey, what's going on, you know, you look sad, you know, and I don't know, it's beautiful to feel useful. I did not have a purpose before I got here, you know, I have this amazing experience to pass on to people, and I try to pass it on as often as possible, you know, I got this purpose, and before my purpose was to get up the courage to kill myself, you know, and now it's help people. I don't know, you know, and I try to do that. I have like 2 more minutes, so I don't know. I can't. It's impossible to put into words how fantastic my life is today. And that's not to say, like, I haven't done some shady stuff in sobriety, because I have. And I've tried to get away with things. And the beautiful thing is that I learned from those experiences. I know how to do a third step from not doing a third step. You know, I know when I have to make amends, because I know what it's like to not make amends. I didn't I didn't bring back the right amount of change the other day, and I didn't think twice about it. Somebody was like, hey, can you go get me a coffee? I was like, sure. And this is 3 weeks ago. And so I go and I get the coffees, and I'm like, I'll just get myself a coffee with this money. Not think twice about it, you know? And I bring back the wrong amount of change, and I give it to this guy. And then it's not until I'm listening to a speaker tape, and she talks about how, you know, she brings him back the right amount of change today. And I was like, I did that! So I call my sponsor, like, I think I owe this guy, like, $1.50, you know? And the worst part about it is, like, I don't even think about, you know, the fact that I totally gypped this guy, and it's such a shady, old thing to do. It's like that I have to admit what I did to this guy, you know? And, like, I'm not Miss AA, you know? My sponsor likes to call me Miss AA sometimes, you know, because I want things to go the way that I think they should go, and there'd be a lot better for it if they just did it my way. You know, I went through this whole phase where I wanted to tell people, you know, I wanted to set up a table in the back of meetings and tell them exactly what they were doing wrong and what they could do right. Like I did, I would just sit there in a meeting and be like, oh, you're doing it all wrong, you know? But it was coming from a place where I was like, I've had an amazing experience. I want everyone to have an amazing experience of AA. You're missing out, you know? But I got over that because it's like, if God's letting it happen, it's happening, you know? And I'm just here and I'm available and I'm here to make it attractive. I'm here to be a bright spot in AA. There is no point in me coming here and being a glum lot, you know? I got to come here. I got to make it attractive. Because if somebody walks through the door and sees that we're all sitting here like... We were joking about it before the meeting, like, man, and today, after the meeting, we're all going to kill ourselves. So if you'd like to stick around for that, you know, that's not fun. That's not being a glum lot, you know. We got to have fun here. And I found that I don't have fun without a spiritual way of life. I just don't, because I've tried it without that, and it sucks. And, I don't know, man. I have a great time. I can't believe I have friends, to be perfectly honest with you. But it is. It's a good life. And I don't know. I actually care about other people today. Relationships are awesome. And I was terrified of them before. And now I have great, great friends, a great sponsor. I have great girls that I sponsor. I learned so much from them. And I don't know. This is an awesome journey. And I wish you well on yours. Thanks.